Besties, wait, is it, okay, hello, oh my god, I think this is the first time I'm ever doing, like, a pod on my own. It's currently, 2:11 in the morning. I have anatomy homework due tomorrow before my lab, and I am sitting here talking to my phone by myself. Love to see it, love to hear it. I still have to finish chapter 12, which was previously chapter 11.5, but then I went manic for a second. Manic for a second, and was like, you know what? Scratch that. It's over 62k. This can't pass off as half a chapter. Let's just call it chapter 12 and be done. She's almost done, but for some reason, writing this last couple of things is hard. I think it's because it has to do with flashbacks from Harry's past, and so writing that stuff, it's emotional stuff, so it can be tough sometimes. Also, I don't know how to shut the fuck up, but I'm pretty sure you guys know that already, but I think it's fair, because you have been waiting for this chapter for 4 months, so 62k worth of, like, content is only fair, and it's good content. Sorry, I heard someone running around upstairs. It's good content. It's like, I've already said it before, but it's basically like the honeymoon phase before shit hits the fan. And yeah, because it's okay, so people are always asking for angst, and it's like, it'll come, but the thing is, the reason it's taking this long is because chapters 1 through 10 were set up. Now they're in a relationship. We're basically letting you guys enjoy, like, the calmness before the storm, because when things hit, it's gonna be like one thing after the other, and so it's like you know, enjoy this while it lasts. I'm trying to give you all of that boyfriend content without the, you know, other stuff for now, but even then, it's like it's still his internal angst. He's still on his I don't deserve love bullshit. But it's good. I think I really like writing this chapter, like writing chapter 11 and writing this chapter up until the smut, because I don't think the smut will take me that long. Smut is, I feel like it had, like, there's substance in this one, because in the next smut chapter, because it's the first time having sex since they started dating, and then it's also, like, the first time Harry's had emotional sex in a really long time. So it's, like, it's soft. But I feel like smut flows easier because it's pretty, like, you know, self-explanatory to write. But writing, like, emotional stuff is harder, because it's, like, you're trying to build the character's mind so people understand what's happening. And it's, like, I'm trying so hard not to miss any points that may be needed in the future. And so that's why it's taking so long, because I'm, like, going back over it again and again, and I'm like, oh my god, I forgot to mention this, and that would have come back to bite me in the ass if I had it. And so it's stuff like that. But that's the reason the last two chapters have taken so long, because it's really getting into the root of Harry's problems. You know what, since you guys are listening, if you listen to this podcast, bless your heart, I spew utter bullshit most of the time, so I'm thankful for anyone that wants to listen to that. But I'll give you a sneak of what's to come, so, like, an overview. So right now the scenes that we have down are, I've given you snippets of it, but it's like a lot of fluff, and I think that's really sweet, but it's like their type of fluff, where it's like bullying and slandering each other, and I think it's sweet. I think it's very cute. It takes place during the first week of their relationship. It's like from Monday to Thursday, which is hilarious because it's 4 days, but it's 62k. So, but yeah. So Monday is like, basically, it's Harry's, like, he's kind of trying to implement this dynamic onto himself, where he's like, I need to not get overly obsessed with her, or I'll suffocate her, and I can't rely solely on her. Like, he doesn't want to be the type of person whose only personality trait is his relationship, basically. But that's a little hard when he hasn't, you know, been in a quote-unquote strong like with somebody in a really long time. But yeah, so it takes place with that, and then it's a lot of Fangin content, and I know that you guys will appreciate that, because I know you guys said you missed them. And it's just literally just him that Monday, he goes out with his friends to try and distract himself from her, and then it ends up barely working because Niall fucks it up because he's Niall. And then it's they chat during her break, and she's kind of having a rough day. Okay, yes. So I'm trying to piece everything together because I've been writing it for so long. I forget when things take place. So, she hasn't had lunch. He's kind of worried about her. You kind of get a little snippet into why Harry's love language is gift giving so much, because he insists on paying for her to go get lunch or something, and she is being the hard headed independent person that she is, where she's like, I don't want to rely on other people, because it'll come back to bite me in the ass. And he, who loves having people rely on him because he likes, that's how he shows his appreciation. So it's kind of like a clash of those two things. And then eventually she gives in, and she accepts him and buys her lunch, and it's really cute and sweet, I think. And then that same day is when they FaceTime, and this has to do with, you know that we've talked how Harry in his apartment, he has a storage room. It's the forbidden chamber that nobody goes in there. And basically in that storage room is kind of like a workout room / dungeon type of thing. Not sex dungeon. Get your mind out of the gutter. Not sex dungeon. It's a regular, it kind of just dungeon in the sense where he hides all his secrets, basically. And it basically in the corner of the room is his, under a padlock, a strict padlock, a really fancy fridge is where he keeps his blood bags, and he hides them in there, for emergencies, because you know how Mitch brings the whole gang blood bags. But he has kind of he receives some, but he's been giving most of his rations towards the other guys because he has want your name, or I'm just gonna call her blood bag. He has blood bag, and Miss Juice Box. We'll call her Miss Juice Box for the sake of not confusing blood bag and blood bags. But anyways, Miss Juice Box. So he hasn't been drinking at all for months from the blood bags. Keep that in mind. That is a very important clue. He has not been drinking from blood. His only source of blood has been her for the last couple of months. That's going to come back to bite him in the ass. So you're getting a special little snippet that nobody else is. That's where he keeps his blood bags. So you kind of get a view into how he keeps those organized, and and then it's also gym, and he's just trying to spend time, and the way he spends time this entire chapter is basically cleaning. And I think that's really precious, because it's a very common thing a lot of people do, where it's when you're trying to kill time or you're trying to distract yourself, you clean. So he's just wiping his entire apartment head to toe because he's trying to keep himself distracted while she's busy, right? And so he's just polishing his boxing gloves because he boxes because that's sexy. And I talked about it before a long time ago, where he basically has a punching bag that had to be reinforced into the ceiling with huge metal screws and shit, because he has enhanced strength. So when he would punch regular bags, he would rip the things right out of the ceiling. So, and that's so sexy. H word. But anyways, it's like a crumb for the skanks. It feeds our souls. And then it's they FaceTime, and it's very cute. And YN is having a crisis. She's having a crisis because for the first time in a while, it's kind of hit her how lonely she is out here. She's had Harry for the most part, right? But when you really look into it, she's kind of the only friend he's the only friend she's connected with out here in LA in the 6 months she's been there. And this helps kind of put out a timeline, because I know some people get confused with it. She was there for 2 months before she met him, and it's been 4 months into their relationship they've had. So she's been there a total of 6 months, but she's only known him for 4 of those 6 months. So for 6 months, she's been basically mostly he's been the first 2 months she was by herself, which was rough, and then for the last 4 months he's really the only person she's had. And so it kind of hit her today, because she was serving a group of friends at her job, and it kind of reminded her of how she would go out with her friends and stuff. And you get like a snippet into all of the stuff she used to do. You get introduced, remember back in chapter 8, I think, when he had gone to pick her up for their date at Vincenzo's, he saw a portrait of her with two other girls. You get to find out who those two girls are. They're basically her friends. And I know people have asked before, like, oh, will we ever see her introduce him to his friends? You will. So pay attention to, like, who these two girls are, because he will eventually meet them. It'll be great. I'm excited. I'm over the moon for that to happen, because he's, you know, him. So he's going to make his stupid little jokes and shit. Sorry, I heard somebody upstairs. What was I saying? I forgot. Oh, so yeah, you get introduced to who those two girls are. And they'll come into the story in a way, one way or another, later. But I kind of wanted to give y'all a sneak of who they are. And it also is important because as he's listening to her talk about it, and it's kind of like, it's one of those moments where they're connecting emotionally, because she's lonely. And Harry understands that feeling, since he's been lonely for, like, before he met Mitch, he was lonely for a large, like, years, like, over, I think over 30 years, because, let's see, he turned in 1937, and then Snap Crackle kind of left him, like, a year or two later, I think, so for the better part of the 1940s and up until the 1920-ish, 1920, before World War One. I'm gonna say 1915, and to 1920-ish, he was pretty, like, alone. And so he's like, he has experience with that. He doesn't want her feeling that, and this kind of solidifies in his head where he's like, no, I definitely have to, like, introduce her to my friends, because I don't want her feeling isolated anymore. And now that we're in a genuine relationship, there's no excuse to keep her away from them, because this means something now. So that's just kind of like, now he's in his head, he's like, okay, now next week I'll introduce them. But it's also important because they're talking, and she kind of dismisses herself. She's like, oh, I'm dumping, he's like, you wanted to have a nice conversation, and I'm just, like, dumping all of this sadness on you, I'm sorry. And he kind of has a moment, like, back, he did in chapter 6, when she was talking about Bradley, where she was like, oh, you know, yeah, he cheated on me, yeah, he hurt me, yeah, he threw away 5 years of our lives, but it's fine, right? And he had told her, he's like, it's not fine, if he hurt you, then you don't need to make excuses for him. Then this is one of those moments where he's, like, basically telling her, like, hey, don't invalidate your feelings, they're valid. And that's a moment of, like, self-realization, in the sense that he's basically telling her to do what he himself purposely doesn't do. Like, he avoids dealing with his emotions, he avoids thinking about them and hashing them out, but he's telling her to do it. So he's kind of, like, realizing, like, oh, you know, it's very hypocritical of me. But yeah, it's cute, because he gets very passionate about it. He's kind of like, do not invalidate your feeling, like, be a little nicer to yourself, etc., etc. And it's cute. And then there's a moment where it's like, they've been dating for a few days, but they have been together realistically for months now, and it's one of those moments where they kind of admit that to each other. And I teared up writing it, because I thought it was so precious how they're starting to, like, open up and admit to each other that they really did like each other for so long. And, like, during all of it, like, they hid their feelings, and the whole, like, repressed pining is coming out, where they're like, yeah, like, we, like, I liked you way before I admitted I did, basically. Like, I wanted more before we actually made the motion to make this happen. And it's a really sweet thing. And then, you know, of course, they're whores, so, like, they have a little moment where she's like, you know what, you should box for me. And then, it's cute, because when he calls her, she had just gotten out of the shower, And so she had been getting dressed, like, off to the side of the camera. And she puts on, like, this, like, a sports bra and basically, like, boy short panties. And then when she comes on to the camera, he's, like, delicious and eyeful. And so when he's, like, fine, I'll box, you know, like, we'll chat and while I box. Because he hasn't practiced in a while. And she kind of makes a joke where he's like, any more requests? And she's like, take off your shirt. And then he goes, you first. And she's like, I don't even have a shirt on. I'm in a bra. And because he goes, he's like, if you get to see my tits, I get to see yours. And I don't know, it's very, like, a very them interaction. And then you get some chismoso bullshit because, you know, yes. And then after that, it's kind of like, he plans. Hold on, Monday. It's just Monday. But the rest of the week, he basically plans, like, everything. He plans out what he's going to do because he had... The reason I mentioned her friends and stuff is because she had told him about a tradition they used to do back when they were kids. And they continued to do it when they grew up. And so he was like... That was one of the favorite stories she had told him about her friends. And he's like, you know what? She's feeling so lonely out here. What if I go out of my way to recreate that for her? And so that's like where it gets soft, because he spends the rest of the week like planning this surprise for her, going out of her way to make it as perfect as his way out of to make it as perfect as possible, like how her friend used to do it. And it's just really sweet and tender. That's what's gonna happen on Friday, you know, like with the smut and stuff. That's what makes it all soft, because he's basically doing this big grand romantic gesture thing that he hasn't done since the 1930s, and he's loved doing that. He loved showing people that he cared for them through his actions and his gifts. And so it's like, it's a big deal for him, because he's like, I haven't been able to put this into action in so long, and now I have somebody I care about that I can do this with. So he's like being a control freak and a perfectionist, and he's like, everything has to be perfect or I'm going to stick myself. And it's cute, and you get like some minimal interactions. You get another little like date where he stops by her job with food from her favorite restaurant, and they kind of just eat in the car and chat, and like, it's cute, it's wholesome. And then the last chunk of it has to do with the Thursday night before, like, he's very anxious about everything. So he's kind of just walking around trying to find things to do, because obviously he can't sleep. And she's asleep because she has work the next day. So he's trying to find things to do. And he ends up at his piano. And something that we've emphasized throughout the entire story is that he hasn't played his piano in a really long time. Like over 30 years. And the first time he's played, you get a glimpse like it was with her. And the first time he went to play, he like back in chapter 10... when she asked him to, he'd almost had like a panic attack, because every time he plays, it kind of reverts him back to that time when he learned how to play, and it basically sends him down memory lane unwillingly, and it makes him basically relive all his past, and he doesn't want to do that. So that's the whole reason he kind of put the piano away in the first place, because it reminded him too much of his past. And you kind of get a glimpse into how that happened. So, basically, I'm trying to summarize. There was a portion of his life where he kind of used, like, the songs he learned and all of that stuff as kind of, like, a coping mechanism. Because when he learned to play that music, it was during a time where he was blissfully unaware of everything that was happening. It was, like, basically the good part of his relationship. And the best part in his life was, like, when he had been blissfully unaware because he had thought he had found the love of his life. Everything was going great. Like, he didn't have to worry anymore, because like he had his family business. He'd found the girl he wanted to marry. She loved him despite the fact that he was lower class. Her family can take, like, you know, all that stuff. And so he had used that. He says it brings him like a type of twisted comfort. And it kind of relates to, like, you know how sometimes when you think about somebody who fucked you over, you might think back to like the good times, that happened, like, despite everything bad that happened, there were good times, and it's kind of that melancholic nostalgia of, like, this was a really bad time for me, but there were good moments that I cherished, despite the fact that they came out of, like, something very toxic. And so it's kind of like that. I feel like even outside of, like, a supernatural fanfiction or whatever, that's something a lot of people can relate to, where it's like you are pining after those moments that you were happy within something that was ruining you, basically. I feel like I'm getting very philosophical. It's a human instinct to, like, find the good in all the bad you've endured. You cling to, like, the good part, and that's basically why he used to, for a large portion of time, he bought this piano that looked almost exactly like the one he learned on, and he would, like, basically drag it around wherever he and his friends moved around the country, around the world. He would bring it with him, and he would spend so long playing the songs, because they, for a second, it would, like, numb him. Like, he would be in that headspace of, like, I'm happy, like, this is, it was kind of like feeling that happiness again while he was playing. It was like a bubble, basically. It didn't, like, I don't know how to explain it, like, it was him inserting himself into in a headspace where he was happy, so he could escape how he actually felt. But eventually, that kind of wore away. He says, eventually he drained the happiness, like, he drained whatever anesthetic that, you know, habit had. And so when he would play, he would just start remembering the bad parts instead. Like, eventually his, like, the nostalgia wore away, and, like, the truth is what he would think about when he played. So that when it no longer worked for him, he stored away his piano and didn't touch it again up until Your Name came along. YN. I'm going to say YN. That sounds better. Up until YN came along. And so he, basically, the point is, he hasn't played by himself in almost 50 years. And he's scared that if he plays, he'll kind of go into an episode. Because I've explained that he like, you know, if you've struggled with mental health, you know that sometimes you go into a really destructive state of mind that you can't control, even if you know you're doing it. And so he's scared of pushing himself into one of those, because last time, usually, like, across his entire life, whenever he's had one of those after he turned, things don't usually turn out very well. He's had a couple. Cancun was one of them, and you saw what you, like, according to the little edit, pictured, sneak peek, whatever thing I gave you, you saw what happened last time he had an episode. 5 people ended up dead in Mexico, because he kind of, the way he, like, it'll be talked about later, but, when Cancun is, like, the entirety of it is explained, it's like he blacks out, like, you black out, basically, like, you don't know what you're doing. And so he, like, when he does that, obviously, it's dangerous because he loses control of his, and, like, of his impulses. And so he's scared to, he's like, what if I decide to play and, go into an episode or something bad happens? But, he's kind of, is at this standstill moment. That's why I said this part of the fic is, like, this chapter's so long, because it's a really fundamental part where he kind of stands up, like, stands his place for the first time in a while against, like, all of his demons, where he's like, you know what, I have run away from this long enough, I need to kind of fully, because across all of his life he has never really fully processed what had happened to him. He'd kind of processed it in pieces, but he never really fully accepted it. So this is the first time he's like, from beginning to end, he's like, no, I'm going to let it all in, let it consume me, and then, you know, see where it gets me, because if I keep pushing it off, like, I can only keep pushing it off for so long, basically. So as he starts playing, and the reason he hadn't, it's like, it's the first time he's played alone. Last time when he played with Wyan, she had, remember, she had been there to kind of comfort him. She had thought he had been nervous because she's like, oh, he's nervous playing in front of me, you know, because I'm sitting here staring at him. So she had comforted him, and you know that she was like rubbing over his thigh and like encouraging him. But in reality, he had been nervous because he was scared of going into an episode. And she had been there to stave that off. But she's not here this time around. So if he goes into an episode, there's no one to help him. Like, his friends are obviously in the building, right? But they don't know what he's doing. So by the time they find out, it's going to be too late. So he starts playing. And as he starts playing, it's kind of like in a movie where he's playing, but you're getting a peek inside his head, and he's going through these flashbacks, and you're getting chunks of what happened in his life. You get, like, images, and you get, ooh, I love this. You get quotes. They're, like, quotes from his past. They're disembodied. You don't know who said what. All you know is that I'm throwing you all of these hints, all of these clues, and you kind of have to hash out who you think said what. Some of the stuff is obvious. Like, some of the stuff is like, oh, this was obviously Snap, Crackle, you know? Some of the stuff are characters that haven't been introduced yet. You know, like, it's some of the stuff is stuff. Because, like, eventually, with all of these quotes, they will make an appearance in the flashback chapter. So you'll get to know who said what. But for now, I'm kind of giving you all these hints of what happened. And what's funny is some of the quotes are very deceiving. Like, you might think, you might read a quote and be like, oh, this is obviously has to do with, like, his ex. And it might be somebody completely different that he's saying it to that's not his ex. But you just don't know who that person is yet or what impact they had in his life. I thought that's really cool. I love it when stories or movies do that, where you get all of these, like, this person is going through these memories and you get all of this influx of quotes from their life. And it's, like, echoey and, like, very, you know, it's overwhelming. And so you get that. And you're getting, so it's in, like, little chunks. Basically, you get quotes. Then you kind of get memories of places that were very important in his story. And then you also get objects. Like, oh, like, for example, hit, like, the lion head ring, but you get hints that of things that are going to appear throughout his life. Like, he says that he puts a lot of meaning behind objects because they kind of hold the spirit of whatever event happened. So, you know, his mom's ring, lionhead ring. There's other stuff. There's, like, this red, blood red handkerchief with an embroidered H that it was a gift from somebody in his past. And it was blood red because after he became a vampire, vampires would carry around their handkerchiefs, and like after they would feed, they would obviously like clean themselves up. And if they had like a maroon, like a burgundy handkerchief that was dark, you couldn't see the blood stains on it. And I know I'm Galaxy Brain for that. I'm a genius. But it's stuff like that. And yeah, so he's basically going through all these paths. And then you get flashbacks to him in Snap, Crackle. You get this had originally been a, okay, I don't know if it was Reddit, but I went and, like, dug through, because I was, like, we talked about, like, the French lullabies, because Miss Snapcrackle's French, the French lullabies that she would have, like, she taught him on the piano when he was first learning, you know, you start learning easy things, and then you get into the bigger, more difficult things, and so we hadn't really hashed out what lullaby to use. Layla had an idea for one, but I was like, I feel like this one doesn't connect enough with the story. So I looked into finding a different one that was like it needs to be a child lullaby. Because Layla's, it was like a song. It wasn't a lullaby. It was like a French song. So it was complicated, more complicated. So I was like, no, I need like a lullaby, like something like that would have been taught to a child, you know? So I found one And I spent hours, like, combing through Google. I was like, I need one that, because I was like, I'm very particular about the way I write it. I was like, I need one that is the correct date, basically. Like, that would, that was written before this happened, that was written around the time she was alive. Like, so I found one, and the lyrics of it are really sad. The story behind it is really sad. Like, the tune, I'm going to link it when I post the chapter, because I saved it. So I'll link it. I forgot what it's called, but in English it translates to By the Clear Fountain. And the story behind it is really sad because the tune is very lively, but the singing, the lyrics itself are very sad, having a little golden moment where it's like basically, I'll tell you, like, I don't want to tell you because I wanted to be surprised. And it's very, it's like a very emotional thing because he, like, the person in the song is talking about how they were walking. And they came upon a fountain, and they took, like, they bathed in it, and they're basically really sad because the love of their life abandoned them, and it's a woman, because she refused to give up her virginity to him, and so she left him, and she's kind of, like, wallowing in her own sadness, and it's, like, this whole story is the lyrics, and so are sad, too, and so the way, the reason it resonates so hard with Harry is because she had taught him this lullaby, and it had been an unintentional foreshadowing of what was going to happen to him. It's about parallels. Y'all know the memes that are like, the meme that's like, it's about the, is it, I think it's about, it's either about the horses or about the cones, I don't remember, but the guy is like, it's about the cones or whatever, it's about the parallels. Literature is always about parallels, and so basically he's like, he's taking in the parallels between how fucked up it is that she taught him this lullaby, and it was basically like a predisposed hint that the universe had slapped him with of what was gonna happen, and he had no idea. So that's something that I think is really cool. I love it when stories have things like that. It gives the story a lot of meaning. And so that's one of the scenes where he's learning to play that lullaby, and she's, like, circling around him, like, while singing it, while he's playing, kind of keeping him in tune. So it's, like, this twisted, kind of eerie moment. And I imagine this scene takes place in the room where the Falling music video was shot, like, in that piano with all the fancy paintings, with the shutters, and the light coming in and casting, like, a hazy glow all over the room. And it's just, and then she's, like, dragging her. So it's said that she had, like, she would keep her nails painted, like, a very pale pink, and she would sharpen them to points because she thought it looked delicate. He thought it looked, like, nice, but he never realized how kind of menacing that was until afterwards. And she's, like, dragging her hand along the back of his neck. And it's just, you can chills, besties. But, yeah, and then, so that's one of the memories she sees. He sees, and then, like, you get a peek of, like, I know y'all were going apeshit over this. It's, like, a peek, it's smut, but it kind of has more, it's there because it's, like, it's one instance, it's comparisons, basically. He's having these moments where he sees, a memory of his ex. And then one of YN is layered on top of it. And he's trying to figure out, he's like, why is my brain comparing memories, basically? And so, like, it's like the sex obviously comes into play with YN as well. And, like, all this stuff. And it's like him trying to figure out, why is my brain, like, comparing these two? Like, what is it trying to do? And then you'll see why. And it's a very, like, realization moment for him. It's a very liberating moment for him. But, yeah. So, that's kind of like a... It's not even a synopsis. It was, like, I told you a lot of what's going on. There's obviously more details to it. But those are the big things that I wanted to hit. And, I mean, if you're listening to the podcast, you deserve a peek into what I'm talking about. So, yeah. I'm really excited for this chapter. I feel like I've been struggling to write the last two. But maybe after this one, I feel like the smut will flow a lot easier. Perhaps it'll get posted. lot sooner. But I make no promises because, you know, school is slaughtering me. But yeah. And, okay, let me go into Tumblr.com and see what you guys have asked me. Let's see. Okay. Someone said... Oh, wait. No, I answered some of them. Let me see. Okay. Crazy stories. I'll do that in a second. I have two. And then, talk about college life so far. Besties, I have never wanted to jump off a cliff more. I am... Okay, I talked about this the other day. Where it's like when you are doing a difficult, like as you progress through college, what high school never told you is that, like, when, at least when I was in high school, the way college was shoved down our throats was, oh, you can get a degree in like 4 years, you'll be done. Oh, like FAFSA. And here in Georgia, when you graduate high school, if your GPA is above a certain number, I think it's 3.5, you are automatically eligible for this scholarship called HOPE, which pays up to 85% of your tuition. And so they would tell us, they were like, HOPE would pay 85%. FAFSA, which is like the federal student aid the government gives to students in need when they're going to college, will pay the rest. You'll be fine. You'll be set. You'll be done in 4 years. You'll have your degree. That was a fucking lie. What they didn't tell you is that, especially if you're doing a difficult, like a STEM degree, is that you would only be done in 4 years if you overload yourself with work. If you take summer classes, if you, like, are constantly doing school, that's the only way you could finish in 4 years. And they also didn't account for the fact that if you do a difficult major, you're going to be in school for a long time. Because as you progress the levels of your major, obviously the harder the classes become, the bigger the workload, the more complex, the more studying you have to put in, and you won't have time to do as many classes as you did in freshman year when you were taking, like, your core curriculum, like fucking history classes, like an art class as part of, like a philosophy class. Like, those classes were easier classes. But when you start getting into, like, the beef of it, you're gonna have to diminish the amount of classes you're taking because or else you'll spread yourself too thin. And when I started, I'm telling you this because I know that a lot of you guys are probably either in college right now or you're going into college and as a senior, which is hilarious because I'm going to be a senior probably for a couple of years at the rate I'm going with my degree and like my post-grad classes that I need to include in there. As a senior, I am here to comfort you and tell you that just because you may be behind other people in terms of your how far you are on your degrees, on your degree, how many classes you're taking a semester, it does not make you any less worthy or any less, like, or any stupider. I really struggled with thinking, like, oh, like, why was I able to take 4 classes and 2 labs my freshman year of college? And now I'm taking 2 classes and 2 labs, and it's absolutely drilling me in the ass. It's because as you progress, like I said, up your, like, the complexity level obviously rises. So you have to give more of yourself to your classes. And you can't take that many difficult classes and not kill yourself. Like, and I'm really thankful of the academic advisor I had freshman year, because she told me from the get-go, she was like, as you progress up your biology degree, you may find the need to take less classes because the classes are going to be harder and they're going to demand more of you. That's completely fine. Don't beat yourself up about it. Because it's like, it's easy to take a history class, a college algebra class, like an art class, and you can, like, they're not that bad, right? But when you're taking, like, fucking anatomy and physiology and, like, genetics and O-chem, like, those classes, like, they will suck the soul out of your body. So, like, I'm basically just saying, like, don't beat yourself up if you're not where you think you would be, okay? It's a big sister moment. And I'm, like, I wish, like I already said, I'm the first generation, like, from an immigrant family to go to college here in the States. And it's very different than it was, like, where my parents went. And so I want to pass on, like, whatever I've learned. I pass it forward. Because I don't want anyone to go through, like, the stress that I put myself through. And the, like, the dark mindset of being, like, am I not as smart as I used to be? Am I not as, like, worth? Like, is my brain not worth what I thought it was? Because I'm, like, failing my classes. And it's like, no, you're, like, you, if you take a lot of difficult classes at once, you are going to fail all of them. You need to take smaller, like, smaller amounts of classes so you can devote yourself more to that small tidbit instead of, like, I don't know how to put it, like, you can take four hard classes and not pass any of them, or you can take two hard classes and pass those. It's preferable that, like, yeah, it'll elongate the time you spend at college because you're taking less classes, so obviously it's gonna take you longer to finish your degree. But it would take you long anyways if you took four hard classes and you pass none of them, you know? And then you're losing your money on, like, beside that. So just don't beat yourself up about it. College is, they lied to you when they told you you could finish it in 4 years. It was a blatant lie, and it makes me so mad to this day because that's how they trapped you in college. And, like, I said it before, I was like, I've said it before where it's like, if you're going into college just to go, like, if you're going, you don't know what you want to do, don't do it yet, or don't do it at all. Like, don't waste your time, don't spend your money if you don't know what you want to do. Like, you should go into college only if you have, like, a plan, basically. Because I know a lot of people who have gone into college because they felt they had no other choice, and then they ended up dropping out because they're like, I only went because I felt like I had to, and at the end I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I spent all that time and money for no reason. It's like, figure yourself out first, and then if it's a degree that you need to, like, as a step stool to what you want to do in the future, then you should go to college. That's kind of just what I've learned thus far into my academic, like, to my, like, what's it called, higher education career. Yeah, so life in college is railing me, not in the good way, fortunately. I go to an extension campus of my university, so we don't have dorms, we don't have apartments, so no parties to go to. Because the original campus, the main campus is 2 hours away from where I live. And so the extension campus is like 30 to 40 minutes. And I don't really want a dorm because I don't have the money. I don't want to pay $2,000 to live in a dorm room, like in one room with another person I don't know and share a bathroom. Because the way they do it, it's like, the way they dorm, at least at my school, it's like one entire dorm has two rooms and one bathroom, so you're living with three other people. I'd rather just, you know, be here at my house with people I know. My food is paid for. I don't have to pay for rent. I have my car. I live with my sister. You know, I'm in my room with my sister, so not my room, my sister's room, because my grandma's in my other room, which is a whole other thing I can't even get into because I will get murderous. But yeah, today I had my first exam this semester. It was a genetics exam, and I'd taken genetics before, and it was back when COVID started. It was like the first fall semester during COVID, so fall 2020. I took that class online, and I dropped it. That shit was so hard. I got a 68 on my first exam, and I think it was because the teacher was a fucking bitch. Like, she taught amazing. She was great. She was super sweet, but her exams were way too complex for, like, the lectures she gave. Like, she basically, the material of her exams, she taught basically 10% of it, and the 90% was from the textbook. And when it comes to science, like, upper level science courses, you have to teach the material. Like, you can't just, it's not the type of stuff that you can read from a textbook and absorb. And I hate when teachers do that, when they're basically like, oh, just read the textbook. It's like, it's not that simple. You have to teach this shit to the students, you have to work out these problems. You can't just read them and expect them to know. And it's so annoying. And like, but I took my first exam today. This teacher, he doesn't teach as well as she taught, but his exams are way easier. Like, he's the type of professor who took, like, his questions from the quizzes he gave us, which is great because that means I already know the answers. Well, not, like, because he, like, I can't check them. Like, he doesn't give us the answers, but you can kind of, like, you know, look them up on the internet or in your notes, so you already kind of know the answers. But, yeah, it was good. I was so nervous about it because I was like, what if I fail? Like, because when I took this class last time, it went so bad. I wanted to bawl. But this one was easy. And, like, the teacher I had last time made me want to, like, bite her because she gave us a 60-minute block to take an exam. And, like, genetics isn't the type of class that you can take an exam in 60 minutes. It's so complicated. And it makes me want to gag. But this teacher, he's like, no, we're going to use our lab block, which is 3 hours. He's like, we're going to use that block to take your exam, which was, like, lovely because it means I didn't have to rush. I got to spend my time on every problem. Like, I was done in 2 hours. I had an hour to spare. And I checked my work and stuff. So it was, like, it was great. I was so happy. At least that's good where it's, like, my first exam went well. So that, because you know how first exams usually set, like, a precedent for the rest of your semester? So the fact that it went well made me really happy. It, like, really comforted me. I hope I get an A. I think I at least got a B. Like, in the entirety of, like, all the multiple choice, I was only kind of, like, wishy-washy about maybe 3 or 4. And it was over, like, 20 questions. And then I'm pretty sure I did great on all the problems. I checked my work. It was problems that we'd had before as homework assignments. And I'd studied them before. So I was like, okay, I think I got this. And, yeah, so I think that was nice because I know you guys said you're like, how's college, like, updating us, so that's how I'm going. I have my first anatomy exam next week, and that's, I'm terrified for that. Did y'all know that there's like, I think it's like between 22 and 27 bones in the skull? I thought the skull was one fucking bone, and now I'm sitting here having to memorize fucking like holes. Like, I'm not even kidding. She's like, she'll turn the skull and be like, what the fuck is this bump? And I'm like, bitch, I don't know, it's a bump. Like, why the fuck do I need, why does it need a name? It's a bump. Like, it's a bump, it's a groove. What the fuck do you want me to, it's so fucking annoying. But yeah, so that's kicking me in the ass because it's so many terms to memorize and so many little itty bitty pieces of information. So yeah, hold on. Anatomy's probably gonna kick my ass. And the anatomy teacher, she's one of those hard-ass bitches where she was like, it will not be multiple choice and spelling counts, where she, so it's basically she's making us spell out all these complicated ass words and names, because she's like, when you become like, because most of the people taking anatomy are going into the medical field in some shape or form, so they're like, when you're in the anatomy, like you misspelling something could be like the barrier between life and death for somebody. And I'm like, okay, you don't need to be so dramatic. Most of the time when I see doctors doing paperwork, they're just checking stuff off of lists. They're not, but whatever. So that's annoying. Ugh. So I don't know what I'm gonna do with that. But at least genetics for now isn't killing me. Right. Next. The struggles of writing fan fiction. I feel like a lot of people, well, not you guys, but I've had people before where they're like, they don't understand that most people writing fan fiction, when you're writing a chaptered fan fiction, you're literally writing a book. You're writing a novel. I feel like that sounds so dramatic because at least in like society today, fan fiction is kind of seen as taboo. It's kind of seen as stupid simply because it revolves around characters that are already like canon, right? They're not original. Like Harry, he's a superstar. But I don't think what people understand is writers create these characters out of their own minds, and then they just slap Harry's face on it. He's just a face claim. And I kind of didn't realize that until this year, because I had always thought, oh, I'm like modeling my stories around Harry. I'm not. my characters come directly from who I am, and then I just slapped Harry's face on it, because right now he's the only, like, he's basically the main person who I have any sort of sexual attraction to. So it was like that. It's like, yeah, I'll slap his face on it because he works with the sex appeal. I can see, like, my character, like, he has the right look. Writing Harry fanfiction, his fandom is so massive that it brings in the crowds and it helps people, like, spread your writing. Some people do it for that sole reason. Some people only write Harry fanfiction because they know it'll get their writing, like, out there, which is, like, fair, you know? You do what you gotta do. I write it because I like Harry. I generally like him. It's very easy to, like, basically paste his face on the characters I make in my head, because he has the look. You know exactly what I mean. He can look sweet and innocent, and he can look like a raging whore. Like, he has the range, darling. Like, yeah. So, but I hate it that people are so dismissive towards fanfic writers, and then they're so rude because they're like, when I got that anonymous message, I wish y'all could have seen the way I was choking. I was laughing so hard because they were like, it was like, you're the reason the fanfic, like, community is dying because you never write. I was like, bitch. And then it's like, just admit that you're, like, you're writing a shit. And I was like, if my writing is shit, why have you been sitting here waiting 2 years for an update on Sharing Isn't Always Caring? If it's so shit, why did you read it in the first place? Because it's amazing. Fuck you. And, yeah, people are just so entitled to fanfic writers' works. And it makes me so mad, because it's like, at the end of the day, I don't know if this will sound, like, shitty or not, but at the end of the day, fanfic writers don't owe anybody shit except to themselves. They are sharing their work freely. First of all, for free, if you haven't noticed, because I've read fanfictions that rival classic literature. Like, I read it, and I'm like, yeah, this, I would pay to read this. I would not pay to read, like, fucking, what is it? Like, Metamorphosis by Frank Kafka. That entire book was like, what the fuck am I reading? Like, why did I... Like, I hated the fact that I paid money to read that because it was required by school. I was like, what the fuck? Like, I read fanfiction literature that embodies emotions way better than that shit ever did. So I was like, I would pay to read this. And yet fanfic writers put it out regularly for free. And people think they're entitled to it because of that. Simply because it's fanfiction. And that pisses me the hell off. And then also, what else? I'm thinking, there was something else, but I forgot. I feel like a lot of people in the writing community, like, a lot of readers, pit writers against each other. I don't like that. They pit writers against each other in terms of, like, oh, this person wrote a vampire AU, and then somebody else decides to write a vampire AU, and then they're like, you can't write it, you're copying the other person. And it's like, they're not, like, nobody owns an AU. Just because one person writes it doesn't mean another person can't. I know a lot of people are like, I get a lot of kind of backhanded compliments from people, in the sense that they're like, oh, Andrea, like, I'm reading a fan fiction right now, and the chapters are like 5 to 10K, and that's absolute shit compared to, like, when you put out 30K chapters. Like, their writing is like nothing compared to yours. And it's like, I'm really grateful for people, for, like, you guys complimenting me and, like, acknowledging all the effort I put into, like, writing long chapters and the detail I put into my work that kind of ups my word count. But there's ways to compliment people on that without putting other writers down. Writing even 1K worth of words is very difficult. Writing is really hard. You are constructing a universe, and you are trying to find a way to, like, communicate it as effectively as possible to readers so that they can see exactly what you see. It's difficult, because it's like, if you don't do it correctly, the readers won't interpret what you're trying to say, and it just causes a lot of confusion. So, and then it's like, it takes so much effort editing. Like, I would, like, my first favorite, like, my first bookmarked website on Safari is fuckingthesaurus.com. Like, I constantly have it open when I'm writing because there's only so many ways to say a word, and it's like if you start repeating yourself over and over, the writing turns bad, the quality drops exponentially. I don't know, I haven't taken math since freshman, like, no, not freshman, since like 2019. Don't fuck with me, I'm a biology major. Exponentially, I think. Yeah, okay, anyways, it drops because it's like repeating the same words over and over again gets tiring and annoying. And then correcting, like, when you write a lot, it's like correcting the grammar and like sentence structures and like trying to, like, it's a lot. I can see why, like, people who have like book deals. I remember when I was when I was reading Rick Riordan books when he was doing the Heroes of Olympus series, it would take him like a year, I think, or over a year to publish the next book. And I remember being like, why does it take him so long to write this? And like, I never understood why until now. And it's like the fact that he was cranking that shit out once a year, I don't know how he did it. I don't fucking know how he did it. Because I have cranked out in the last 8 months. With this chapter, I would have cranked out over 100K in the last 8 months. But it's like, I don't know how people, like, with book deals do this, because you have the constant pressure of like, if I don't meet this deadline, like, I don't have a job, right? Like, I'll get fired. And so it's, I don't know how people do that. I think that's one of the reasons I can never become like an actual author, because I can't write with that deadline looming over me, because then it's like I forfeit the quality of my writing for the sake of meeting that deadline, and I don't want to do that. That's why I take so long sometimes to push it out, because I only want to put out my absolute best. I refuse to give out anything. I'm a very big perfectionist. It's the Capricorn in me. Everything has to be perfect. It has to be exactly how I want it to be. I refuse to put out anything but my best. And I can't do it. That's why it takes me so long to push it out. If I had like the amount of times I go back and edit, like a lot of the scenes y'all have read, I thought I'd been done with the chapter, and then I went back to edit it and added a completely new scene. Like, if I hadn't gone back to edit, if I hadn't forced myself to do that, the scene wouldn't have been there. And it's, like, a lot of scenes that you guys like and, like, enjoy and details and stuff. So it's, like, it's insane. It's insane to think that it's, like, if I hadn't forced myself to edit, like, that one time, that scene wouldn't have been in there, and I wouldn't have been able to connect it into the future and stuff like that. So it's just, like, appreciate all your writers. Like, no matter whether they're writing 2K or 5K or 60K, writing is so hard, and every word is worth something. Try not to compare writers to each other, because it really creates a very toxic, like, mentality within the community. I know I've talked to people who kind of have, like, a prejudice against other fanfic writers, because they're like, oh, you know, they have this fanfic that it's, like, people are constantly blowing up their ass box, being like, oh my god, you're the best fanfic writer on the site. When people say that to me, I'm honored. Like, that's not one of the bad things. Like, when you guys tell me, like, oh, I think you're my favorite one, that's perfectly fine. I'm talking about the comments where it's like, oh, you are the best writer, all the rest of them are shit, or are the rest of them could never compare. Like, you didn't need to add that extra last bit of putting others down while lifting me up. Like, you don't need to do, like, you know, that's the thing. Like, you don't need to compliment somebody, but you don't need to, like, lift someone up by putting others down, is basically what I'm saying. Like, appreciate anything anybody does, because it's very difficult, and we do it for free, most of us. And Patreon. Okay, that's another thing. People get so pressed when writers do Patreon, and it makes me mad, because it's like, a lot of readers won't even interact with the writing. They will maybe leave a like, which is like, when you think about it, Tumblr isn't like Instagram. A like is an equivalent to, like, potential, like, you know, like, actual monetary benefits. Like, if you get a, like, you know, like, 100,000 likes on TikTok, like, sponsors might, like, reach out to you and stuff like that. And it's like, I don't know, but reblogs are what help writers, because they spread the content. And it's like, y'all get mad that, like, writers go on Patreon and they're, like, actually asking for something for the first time. They're like, hey, you know, like, I put out my work, I put my so much effort, I put my soul into this, and I want to get something from it, you know, like I right. So I updated this app, and apparently you can't, like, I used to be able to record like 2 hours worth of stuff in one sitting. Now it only lets you do it in 60 minute segments. So fuck the app for that, but because that cut me off. But basically, as I was saying, I was just talking about Patreon. I kind of, like, I went on for a while before I realized what had happened, so that sucks. But I had basically just said that people putting their writing on Patreon and asking, like, you know, their readers, if they want to read it, pay for it, totally valid. It's their work, they're entitled to it. It's like I related it to like a freelance graphic designer. They do graphic design as a hobby, you know, Photoshop and stuff like that, and then they decide to, like, you know, do it for money, and that's a respected career because, you know, they're putting their skills to good use, and that's totally valid. Hold on, I have to blow my nose. My apologies. You have to hear that. I have very bad allergies. Me and Harry, hay fever arc. Love that for us. But anyways, it's like, if people who, readers who support, like writers on Patreon is amazing, because then writers, it motivates them, because then they're like, oh my god, like, people like my stuff enough to, like, pay for it, and that means a lot. And so then it's like, it makes you want to put out more content. But if you don't want to pay for it, like, the least you could do is your blog, is spread the content. Like, if you can like it, you can spare 2 more seconds and reblog it, so that writer potentially gains a more audience and receives more attention for the hard work they put in. So yeah, that's that. Someone said Harry Styles AARP era. I have no clue what that is. I'm sorry. Predictions for my concert. Okay. First of all, let's get into it, yeah. I hate that he's just repeating the same outfit over and over again in different colors. It makes me want to maul him with a chainsaw. Like, the whole thing that Harry's always had going for him in his concerts is his outfits. Is like, it's like the big thing, you know? It's like his flamboyance, his interactions, incredible. And then his outfits have always just been like one of the little tokens that really set him apart from a lot of other artists. And then I get that the whole point of it is doing like different iterations of the fine line outfit. I get that. But it's the same shit over and over again, and I'm exhausted. Like, the Las Vegas fit, fantastic. That has been... Someone said rate them, right? Hold on. Someone else said rate them. Yeah, okay. I'll combine those two. The Las Vegas fit, my top tier one. The vest with the tassels, iconic, amazing. The tits out, beautiful. You know the audio that's like, great tits. Fabulous, that one. That TikTok audio, period. He looked amazing. And then, like, I remember the first time we got the first fit after that one. Everyone was, like, very unamused because it was so simple compared to what he's usually known for. Like, we're used to sequins and sparkle and glitter and floral. Like, you know how he had that one suit where he literally looked like the Arizona green tea can. The most beautiful Arizona green tea can I've ever seen. Like, it made, like, he looked amazing. And then it's, like, now this. And like, we know who they know, because Harry Lambert reposted something someone said about the fit, where it's like me seeing Harry wear the same shit over and over again or whatever. So they know what they're doing, and they continue doing it, and it's like, we're all annoyed at this point. Like, we waited so long for this tour, we stressed about it so much, we put up with so much bullshit only for these outfits to be subpar. Like, at this point, I think I'm gonna outdress Harry at my concert. Like, I don't know. I wish he would do something else. I want the flamboyance back. It doesn't even have to be suits. It just has to be something else. Because I'm exhausted. Exhausted. I'm paying $200 to see tits and ass. And yet, All I get is suspenders and big pants that don't even show off his butt. Oh my god. I can't do this. Anyways, yeah. So I think he needs to get his shit together. Which is hilarious because... Okay. Let me rate them real quick. I really liked the... let me think. Okay, so Las Vegas Fit is my top one. I liked the silk one where it was like the silk cream, like silver shirt. But I don't like that the entire fit was the same color. I didn't like that. He looked like a fucking breadstick. Like, he's already Caucasian. You can't put a Caucasian in white and then expect it to look, you know? And so, and so it's like, no. I didn't like, maybe they should have paired it with some other colored pants. And then it would have been amazing. But right now, I think my favorite one, it's either between the orange fit, like the blood orange fit, or the one where it was like cream pants and like a lavender sparkly shirt. That one was pretty. I like that one. But yeah, I think that's it. That's my two favorite for now. Tonight he wore like the baby blue one. That one was pretty. But again, I was like, eh. The pants that he wore on the one before this, that had like the gold pattern. I don't know what the pattern was. Those were cool. But literally, it's the same outfit over and over again, so they're all just blending together in my head. Predictions for my concert. So last time, let's say, I don't know what Georgia has to offer. If he's gonna do the whole thing where he's like, oh, state facts or whatever, I don't know what he's gonna say, because it's like, yeah, like, we have Coca-Cola World, you know, we have the Georgia Aquarium, we have, Fernbeck Museum, don't know what else Georgia has going for, really, other than, like, rednecks, and, I mean, Atlanta's great, I love it, like, okay, I am terrified of the city. But like, I like the aesthetic of the city, but I don't like the actual city. Like, cities, they're very compact, and like, they make me feel very claustrophobic. Maybe it's just because I've lived in like a rural area for so long. I like the calmness that comes with like living in like the suburbs. But I don't know what he's gonna say. I'm gonna pray that he has his tits out. My hopes aren't high, but I'm gonna pray they're out, because I want to see them one-on-one. I don't know if I'm going to take a sign or not yet. I feel like I should. I know someone took one that was like nice butt, and I kind of want to be like nice tits, just to see what happens, but I don't know if I'm bold enough to do that, and I don't even know if I'm tall enough for him to see the sign. I don't know. I hope he jokes around a lot. I made a post where I was like, I'm gonna lie and say that it's my birthday, that I'm pregnant, and that I just got engaged, so I can guilt him into planning to be so lonely. Hopefully he'll add it, because he fucking sound checked it, that fucking asshole. So hopefully he'll have added it by then. It's in just over a month, so he has enough time, and then if he doesn't play it, there will be bloodshed. I already said it, it's like a Capricorn anthem, and I need to hear it live. I need to hear it now. And I, the other day, I was joking. I was like, you know what? Maybe he isn't playing it because Anne told him not to. Because she's like, I'm tired of everyone thinking I'm a bitch or something like that. But I don't know. But I hope he plays it, because literally iconic. All right, let's say Halloween plans. Don't have any for now. I never have, really. Like, I don't trick or treat. I don't do anything. Maybe just sit at home and watch scary movies. Don't really feel like I don't go out a lot. I'm too late, because like, all my friends live like 40 minutes away from me, so it's a whole thing trying to get us all together. So I don't know, nothing for now. And then you can do some, I don't know if I'll do the Am I an Asshole from Reddit things, because then I have to do research. So I already ranked the outfits. My thoughts on Montero. Okay, bitch, I have been anticipating this motherfucking album for so long. Let me go through it. Oh, and okay, one more thing I forgot to say. So I posted the other day that I bought the jelly the not jelly, the pony bead kit, like, to make bead bracelets. And, like, okay, I've been trying to decide if I should buy it or not for a month. Because, like, okay, anytime I spend money, I will, like, whenever I want to buy something, I will sit on it for a while. And I'm like, I eventually kind of forget about it. I'm like, oh, then I didn't really want it that bad, so it wasn't worth spending the money. But I have, like, so I've been sitting on it for, like, I think over 3 weeks now. And I was like, I still want to get the kit. So I bought it. And, like, I never got to have it as a child because we were poor. Like, you know, like, the last thing, like, we've gone through rough patches. Like, there was a point in my life where my sister, my parents, we were all living in my aunt's apartment, like, in a single, like, bedroom. Because, like, we literally couldn't afford an apartment. So it's, like, the last thing on, like, well, obviously it's not that way now. Like, we're way better now. I think that was during, like, the recession. I almost said the regression. The recession, where it was, like, things got tough. So, you know, stuff got rough. So it's, like, the last thing for most of my life. It's, like, spending money has to do with, like, spending only on necessities. And, like, so now that I have my own money, I almost never spend it. Because I live with the constant fear of something happening and, like, me needing it for an emergency. So it's like back before I even started being able to have money. And the way I have money is, like, I know people have asked me before, because I don't work, because I can't spread myself that thin. I can't like do a bio degree and work at the same time. I will literally kill myself trying to do that. Like, all my friends who work and have done the bio degree, they're like, yeah, they're going on, like, their 10th year of college, and I'm not about to fucking, you know. And so, like, I'm lucky enough that my scholarship, like, I've gotten scholarships that give me some money back, so I just save it, you know, and, like, use that for textbooks and stuff, and then I raise it up. I very rarely spend it, I remember when I spent the $200 on the Harry ticket. That's, like, the most I'd spent on anything on myself other than textbooks. So it was, like, a big deal. But, yeah, I very rarely spend my money because my parents had raised me to the point where it's, like, I would be, like, I felt bad asking my dad for, like, regular things. Like, before I had any money, I'd be, like, when I'd ask him to, like, buy me deodorant, I felt bad. Because I don't know, I didn't want to make him spend money. And, but yeah, because so now that I have my own money, like, that's why buying things takes me so long. That's why it takes me, like, a month to be, like, to finally pull the trigger on something. Because I'm, like, if I still don't want it that bad after a month, then it's not worth it. But yeah, I bought the little bead kit. And I think, my first bracelet, I'm going to make one, and it's going to say fuck on it. But instead of the U, it's going to be, like, one of the little heart, like, letter things. And I was like, maybe I will make a replica of it and then chuck it on stage at Harry during my concert and be like, for you, Lil Uzi, a Rob Zombie poster. But I don't know, I'm scared to chuck something at him because I also don't want him, because I feel like it's mean. But I also, he won't see me, I can't be like, Harry, take this bracelet. Like, I really want him. I really want to give it to him, though. Because I think he'd like it. I think he'd think it's funny. But I don't know. So, yeah. Okay, moving on. Because I had finished off when I went to... Because I was like... I was on Montero in the last segment. And I had to start a new one. Because I opened Spotify to look at the thing. And it cut off my audio. But anyways, I went on Google to look it up. Okay. Montero. Call Me By Your Name. Amazing. Iconic. Literally a legendary. I feel like this song put him on, like... Because, okay, after he released, Old Town Road, right? That's the big thing that put him on, like, the chart. Then he released, I think, Rodeo. I think Rodeo is incredible. I like the original version. I don't really like the other version with the other rapper. And then I think he did Holiday. Holiday, I feel like it tanked. Like, I barely saw anybody talking about it. But it was amazing. I liked, like, okay, it didn't like it as much, but it, like, the more I listened to it, the more it stuck. It's good. And then Call Me By Your Name, I feel like that one blew up. Like, it blew up. Everyone heard about it. Obviously, most people, because it was controversial. But also, it's just such a good song. It's so catchy. Okay, Dead Right Now. Dead Right Now, it's good. It's not my favorite, but it's good. Industry Baby, iconic. Love it. When I first listened to it the first couple of times, Jack's verse felt so unnecessary. And I wasn't the only one who thought that. Like, my sister, she was like, yeah. She's like, the song would be better without him in it. But the more you listen to it, the more vital it became. Like, it's such a good... It's so good. And then, like, the clapping, iconic. And now I can't imagine the song without it. It's my favorite part. And then this doesn't even have to do with the fact that after that video and after his chicken shop interview, suddenly Jack Harlow, like, a light switch went on in, like, half the female population's heads. And now we're all, like, side-eyeing him. Because it's like he's attractive, but he wasn't anything special. But then his personality, it's so nice. And I think that just goes to prove that personality really is a make or break. Because this guy who I looked at and I was like, he's mediocre. And then I saw him joking around and bantering and I was like, oh my god, I would like to fuck this man. Because, like, he's so charismatic, and for what? But yeah. So, Industry Baby, iconic. That's What I Want. I think this one is probably... I think it's probably my favorite out of the entire album. It's just so good. And I could tell, like, by the snippets Montero had posted on, like, TikTok, that it was going to be good. I was like, this is going to be my favorite. I can feel it. And I had been that way with Golden, too, where I was like, Golden's going to be my favorite. Like, before he dropped it, when we had heard, like, little snippets of it, like, I knew that one was going to be good. The Art of Realization isn't really a song, it's kind of just a commentary. But I find it funny how he's like, sometimes I just drive around and I don't have anywhere to go. Because I remember back when he didn't have his license. And so he had, like, we got to see him on TikTok go through the whole progression of, like, getting his license and then buying a car. And now he's like, I drive around all the time. And I was like, bitch, 2 months ago, you couldn't. So it's funny. Scoop is good. Miss Doja. Is it Miss Doja's on it? Yeah. It's good. It's catchy. But it didn't really hit that much for me. I'll be honest. I didn't listen to all of them much after that because then I had to do homework. But I know I've heard snippets of Lost and Citadel. Sun Goes Down was good. I like that one. But that one came out even before the album. That one, I think, came out... When was it? That one came out between Call Me By Your Name and Industry Baby. It's good. It's sweet. I've heard, like, a chunk of Am I Dreaming. It made me emotional. But, yeah, it's good. Like, okay, this man does not miss. Like, he did really good. And it's been really cool to see his progression of, like, confidence. And, like, he's awesome. Like, it's really cool to see, like, him being himself so confidently is really nice. You don't get that a lot. He's very unapologetic about everything. And that's cool. All right. Any more questions? Let's see. Let's pop into here. Let's read some things. Let's see what the girlies are saying. I made a post, but I was talking earlier about, like, Harry's exes, because when he said the whole thing where he's like, if a man is playing games, he's trash. And it's like, Harry Styles, I know your Aquarius ass commitment issues has played games with a lot of women, so you better shut the fuck up. And then I was joking where I was like, someone had said, was it, because I had, someone had said, you would have thought that with the way, because I had said, I had posted, I was like, it's so weird to me to realize the fact that Harry knows what double texting is. Because you know how we all kind of just think, like, he's so anti-social media that we kind of just see him as, like, an old geezer, and we forget that he's literally 27 years old. And so it's weird. Like, I had to pause for a moment. I was like, pause, hold on. And someone had said, it was like, you would have thought that You would have thought that his first girlfriend was like the Mona Lisa or whatever, from how old we keep thinking he is or whatever. And then I had said, you know what, it makes sense because she's within his age bracket that he usually, like, she's within the age bracket he usually dates anyways. And someone reblogged it and put like a really passive aggressive gif on it of like doing like rolling their eyes, and someone doing like a drum roll and rolling their eyes or whatever. And when I went on their blog, it was somebody who was 35, and I had to resist the urge to reblog it with the Oprah gif, like screenshot their age, because their age says it all. Screenshot their age and like post like the Oprah gif of them shrugging and being like, the geriatrics are at it again. And like, you know, the gif of the woman who's like, if you're not having fun, you can go home. But I would have like put, instead of home, I would have been like, if you're not having fun, you could go back to the nursing home. Like, I don't know why I felt the need to talk about that. But it's because I just saw it was funny. Anyways, so someone sent a story in. A couple people did. Let's read them. Okay, so my freshman year of high school, we read this short story, and the main character got a bloody nose, and I was like, ew, gross, but whatever. And then we were packing up and had like 10 minutes left of class, and I started really feeling really bad. So I looked at my friend and said, I feel like I'm going to pass out. And she kind of laughed because I was early in the morning, so she thought I might like fall asleep. But then I literally passed out, like fully fainted, and fell out of my chair. Oh my God. Bestie, it's your YN moment. And apparently no one did anything at first. They were all just staring at me in shock. And then the teacher like threw a chair out of the way to get over to me because I was at the back of the room. And then I woke up and I was like, dot, 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 dot. And then one girl started laughing and had to leave because she couldn't stop. And later she came up to me and said, I'm so sorry. It was just dead silent. And then you fucking hit the floor. No, that would have been me. I'm sorry. It would have been me. I'm sorry. And anyways, they called the principal and the school police officer for some reason. But in the end, it worked out for the best because we didn't get assigned any homework. Not you almost dying and your teacher being like, you know what, let me just exempt the class from homework today because of the trauma. No, because I really, okay, the girl, I would have been the girl who laughed at you. And I'm sorry, but like I laugh at the worst possible times and at the worst possible scenarios. Like Lindsay the other day, she posted, she was like, I was about to take a nap and then a wasp stung my toe and I fucking lost it. And I felt so bad because in the tags, she was like, I've endured enough. This might be my last straw. I was like, I was just like, okay, but why? Because it's the fact that the emoticon she put was like the colon and then like the slash. She was like, a wasp stung my toe. It's just really funny. And I laugh at the worst possible time. And like, I make jokes at the worst possible times. Like sometimes Paige will be like trauma dumping or like, she's like, I'm in need of emotional support. And I was like, first of all, why are you asking a Capricorn for emotional support? I can't even go through my own emotions. What makes you think I can handle yours? But anyways, that's besides the point. And a Capricorn providing sympathy. Imagine that. But she will try to tell me something and I will start cracking jokes because in my head, I'm like, okay, when I'm sad, I like to be happy by like looking at like funny things. And so if somebody makes me laugh, that makes me happy. So in my head, the way that translates is like, oh, well, Paige is sad. If I make her laugh, then she's happy. Which is like, it's a cute mindset, I guess, but it's not a healthy one because sometimes people don't need to laugh. Sometimes they just need a shoulder to cry on. And I get very, I get very uncomfortable when it comes to emotions. That has to do with a lot of the stuff I've endured. And being the foreign, you know, being the oldest daughter in a foreign family, being the head, like the emotional head of my family, like constantly being the therapist of the entire family, like, you know, being basically the emotional adult in my family and from a young age, being the therapist. And so it's like, I have a lot of trouble expressing and knowing how to handle and like process people's emotions and stuff. So it's like I'm very bad at comforting people because I don't know the right way to do it. Like I'll try, but I get scared because I'm like, I don't want to, because sometimes usually the first thing I can try to like do, like, out of instinct is I'm going to find a way to, like, relate to this problem so, like, I can get a foothold on what the person is going through. But sometimes it's, like, people don't want to hear how you relate to their problems, because then it's, like, it's as if you're turning the conversation towards yourself, and I don't want to do that. I just kind of want to, like, usually when I tell people about my, like, I want them to know that they're not alone, but that's not always what people need. Sometimes people just need to, like, hear you say that their emotions are valid and that you accept them and that you're there to support them. But it's like, I don't know how. So I always, that got really sad really fast. Anyways, point being, overarching theme, I'm really bad at handling emotions, so I'm really bad at reading cues when it comes to that stuff. So, like, my first instinct when anything bad happens is to laugh. And that's probably going to get me slaughtered one day, because I don't know what to do. But yeah, I would have been the chick laughing at you. I'm sorry. I hope you're obviously okay now, because you're here to tell the story. So, I'm sorry that happened. But I'm really happy you didn't have homework that day. Okay. Next story. Here's a story. Warning, most of it was pieced together from a night of drinking and from what my friends told me. Ooh. All right. Back in July, I went to this party in the shady area of NYC, and I met this guy. We start talking, and it leads to us taking shots. I start feeling the tingle, and the guy asks, where do you want to go? And apparently I said, I'll go anywhere with you. Okay. Okay, fanfic moment. Okay. Anywhere with you meant a dark room, and I was giving him head. You know what? I respect that. I respect the whore agenda as long as you whore responsibly. And then I was giving him head. We found out someone was in there. And when the host of the party screamed, who is sucking dick in here? Who's sucking dick in here? All my friends turned to each other and knew it was me. We've been texting and FaceTiming quite a bit, and he's visiting me during fall break. Alright. Wish that was me. really the way you were worded, where it's like, I'll go anywhere with you. Anywhere with you meant in a dark. This is a good story. I like that one. I hope I have a story that way one day. Alright. This is just a random message. I don't think it has to do with the podcast, but I'll answer it, and I'll answer it maybe again. I don't know. Drea, have you ever thought about writing your own original story and sending it into a literary agency and getting published? I've been writing stories all my life, and my friends and family constantly encourage me to write my own novel and get it published, but I'm so afraid. I'm so afraid of being mediocre. Like, sometimes I'm too shy to publish it on this hell site, and most of all, I am so anxious for people to perceive me. Sharing my work can be so intimate. I am so afraid of being vulnerable with so many people. Anyway, you should definitely try to write your own book. I'd buy it in a heartbeat. That's very sweet. Thank you. I don't think I've ever, like, I've thought about publishing a book, but, like, okay, when it comes to fan fiction, the only one I could ever really publish is You're Someone I Just Want Around. And that one was written with Layla. And Layla already said, she was like, I don't want to publish it because I don't want Harry to perceive me, which is fair. It's like, we're not saying that it would blow up, but it would be like, people would probably know that it was, they would find out that it was a Harry fic. Like, everyone found out that 50 Shades of Grey was a Twilight fic. So, like, you know? And also, it's like, this story is so tightly wound with Harry and who he is in the sense of, like, his tattoos, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, if there's just a lot of chunks that we wouldn't be able to take out that, like, are so obviously scream that it's about him. I would love to publish something. But I don't, like, I know, okay, when you say that you're scared of people perceiving your writing, for some reason, I've never had that fear. I have always been very excited to publish my writing. I have always been excited to see what others thought, because I feel like I'm like, it's lived so long in my head that finally getting it out and letting other people consume it and see what they think is what I want most of all. Maybe it's just the fact that I've been writing fan fiction and publishing it regularly for like over 6 years now. So I, like, that fear, I never had it. I haven't felt it in a really long time. But I definitely understand where you say where you're like, it's very vulnerable, because when you write, you are putting yourself into your characters and into your story. So you are exposing a portion of yourself for others to see that usually you wouldn't show anybody. I think that if others tell you that you should publish your writing, you should definitely do it. And I know you're scared of being mediocre, because I know it's like, oh, there's so many books out already. It's like, what's another one lost in the sea of all the rest of the novels? But like, look at After. It's absolute shit, and it got a movie deal. So, you know, if you can write relatively, if you look at your writing, you're like, yeah, this is up to par with that, then you could, you know, you're not mediocre, you're pretty good. So, I don't know what the point of this was, but I'm encouraging you to publish your own book if you want to. If you have it ready, go ahead and do it. What's the worst that could come from it? Like, you get a book deal? Hello? Okay. Miss Casia sent in something that said, talk about how college sucks and you should be free. T. I already talked about how college sucks. It should be free. Because I hate the fact that I'm paying $100 to do homework. Like, I'm paying, aside from, like, putting myself in debt to pay, like, for class, then I have to pay out of pocket $100 for my homework, because teachers are fucking insane. Okay, no, because that Annan is so right. At this point, I only follow you for your personality, even though you're a hairy vlog. That's very sweet. Thank you. I'm honored. If anyone ever follows me and they're not even a hairy fan, I want to thank you, because you're putting up with all my hairy bullshit just to get my humor, and I love you. Can you imagine doing a meet and greet with your followers on here? Want to meet you so bad. That's so cute. No, I don't even know. Because literally, I have had dreams where it has just been like I held like a little party and y'all just came over and it was so fun and we just chatted and shit. And like, I was going to ask, because okay, something you can do on this app is like, you can make an account. It doesn't have to be like your name. It can be like a throwaway account, you know? Like, it could just be like a username. It could just be a stupid name or whatever. And you guys can send me in like voice questions. Like, you can record your questions and then I can add them into the episode and answer them. And I think that's really cool. But I know that like a lot of people probably wouldn't do it, because it's like, oh, I'm like, you have to make an account. You have to, I know the reason people talk to me on Tumblr is because of like the shield that like the anonymous feature gives you, where it's like, it kind of helps with your anxiety. Because, like, you're anonymous, and I get that, but it's, like, at the same time, like I said, you can make a throwaway account and send me the voice memo, and it's, like, it doesn't show who it's from. It's literally taking a little recording and just putting it in there, and the only reason they make you do it, like, the account is so that it can be organized when I get the messages, but I would love it if you guys would, like, do that and send me in, questions. Like, I would love hearing you guys talk, because I feel like when I look at Tumblr and I look at followers and I look at you, like, not even followers, just like when I look at you guys, when I interact with you guys, because I don't know, you already know, I don't really look at you as like followers. I kind of just think you're all my besties. Like, I refer to you whenever I talk to Paige, like, you can ask her. Whenever I talk to her, like, about you guys, I always say the girlies. Like, that's how I refer to you guys. Naturally, that's my instinct. Because it's just like, y'all are my like friends, my little family, my little community. And so it's like, I would love to directly get stuff from you guys, because that way I'm including you in the podcast in some way, instead of just y'all having to sit there and listen to me ramble for like 2 hours. Also, the way this works is, if any of you guys would ever be like willing to be on the podcast, the way is like, it works is, I can send you guys a link, I can post a link, and you guys can join from a browser, like on your phone. You don't have to make an account, you don't have to do anything. You can literally just join from Safari and talk and chat, no account, no anything, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, because Clara doesn't have an account and she joined, you know. So if you guys would ever want to do that and we could just do like a group podcast, I would love to do that. Because I just think I want to interact with you guys. more. I feel like interacting one-on-one, like, whenever you hear someone's voice, it kind of solidifies. It's like, oh, wait, this is a real person, you know? So it's like talking to you guys one-on-one would kind of bring us closer as like a little group, a little community, and it'd be fun. Obviously, I understand if a lot of people don't want to do it, because again, anonymity is like it's a big thing on Tumblr, and it helps, like, it's like anxiety and all that stuff. And I, like, the first time I talked to Paige, I was nervous. The first time I talked to Clara, I was nervous. I get that. But if for anyone who would want to do it, I would love to do that. So, yeah. All right, and then that's all I have for now. Yeah. Also, this is random, but let's talk about Don't Worry, Darling, because I feel like we all went berserk when that clip dropped of, like, Flo and Harry making out. You don't understand. I had an entire meltdown in the car because the clip dropped, the teaser dropped when I was in the car. My mom was driving us back home. I'd just gone out of class. And I had the phone on my aux. I was listening to music. I yanked my phone off the cord and started screaming. And my mom got so pissed. She was like, what the hell is wrong with you? I was yelling. I was like, oh my God, because we've gone through so much shit for this movie. And it's like finally getting to see like a clip of what we knew was going to happen. It's like we knew Harry was going to be a whore. But seeing it actually happen is a whole other thing. I am so excited for this movie. I refuse to let anything ruin it for me. Like, I love Florence. I love Harry. I refuse to let anything else ruin it for me. Am I going to pirate it? Absolutely. I'm not giving a penny, and y'all know why. But I'm excited to see Harry be a whore. Like, and then Annan the other day, who was like, oh, my friend went to go see the showing, and she said that he goes down on her for a minute. I was like, no, because if this happens, then you will never hear it. You will never hear the end from me. That shit will be posted it will be plastered all over my blog. It'll be the gift as my header. You do not understand. I've been waiting for this since I was 11. I've been waiting for him to be a whore since I was 11. Like, I'm so excited. But, that's all I have to talk about right now, at least. I have to go do anatomy homework. Tomorrow, I really want to finish this chapter, but like I said, it's been a struggle. But it's almost done. It's, like, so close to being done. Like, so, so, so close. And, yeah. If you're listening to this, thank you for tuning in. This is the first podcast I've done without Paige. Because I always thought, I was like, oh, it'll be so weird being on my own. But, I mean, this is okay. I feel like I wasn't as funny as I normally am. Mostly because I was talking about, like, I don't know, deeper stuff for some reason. I just in my feelings, I guess. But I hope you guys still enjoyed it. And, yeah. Well, I love you. Thank you for listening. But yeah, definitely think about what I said about having you guys on the podcast or you guys sending messages in, because I would love to do that. I think it'd be really fun. But that's it. Okay. Bye.